Secret Service Director Kim Cheadle grilled in a blistering hearing on Capitol Hill.
On July 13th, we failed. I take full responsibility for any security lapse of our agency.
Because Donald Trump is alive, and thank God he is, you look incompetent. If Donald Trump had been killed, you would have looked culpable.
You know, in focusing more attention to what happened, and maybe more importantly, from a security standpoint, what didn't happen at the farm field in Butler, Pennsylvania that day, it really is a miracle, as one congressman said, that Donald Trump wasn't killed that day. It's just absolutely stunning. We will get into that on the John Carlson Show. We have been focusing on the politics of the Republican National Convention and Trump's running mate, J.D. Vance, and the unity the party showed. And then, boom, Joe Biden dropping out of the race, or shall I say, pushed out of the race.
You said it yesterday at the end of the show. Tune in tomorrow as we will see what we're supposed to talk about. And here we go.
And the Democrats' show of relief, you know, money's piling and pouring in and piling on in the Kamala Harris.
$100 million last I heard?
Oh, it's more than that now.
Wow.
It's just pouring in. This is just a sign of relief. They're not going to be stuck with Biden. And we will get into, Philip J., I just sent you a very interesting clip from Steve Kornacki over at MSNBC.
Oh, is this the polling thing?
Who's a very honest numbers guy. Mm-hmm. Very honest numbers guy. MSNBC, there's one little bright ray of call them as you see them.
Or, yeah, there you go.
Be something, focused on the,
something reliable.
The facts, focused on the evidence, not on ideology. And it's Steve Kornacki. Anyway, we'll hear a little bit more about how this race shapes up. But for Democrats right now, what I find most interesting is it's not so much that they're excited about Kamala. They're just excited that it's not Biden. and anyone. And in fact, the enthusiasm being shown for Kamala, who is a second-tier politician, you'll be hearing some wonderful examples of that. Kellyanne Conway has a superb riff on how she went from someone who was a leading contender for president when she stepped into the race, and then people got to hear her, people got to saw her, and they just fled. She ended up, I think, running fourth in her own home state of California in the polls before she dropped out of the race. I think even before the Iowa caucuses, when she ran for president in her own right.
Is John Carlson surprised how fast things have turned around in favor of Kamala Harris and how things, the delegates, and looks like she's going to be the nomination?
No, I knew it would be one or the other.
Okay.
I knew that the Democrats would either quickly close ranks behind her. So, you know, the last thing we want is a wide open convention this close, or a wide open race this close to the convention. We don't know what on earth will go on. So they're either going to very quickly say, okay, Biden's out. Everyone, please, you know, wrap your arms around Kamala.
Uh-huh.
Wrap your arms around the vice president. This is the horse we will ride in, what we will ride on, and hopefully she will ride in to the winner's circle. That's the pony we got to go with.
And what did John Fund?
Or she would collapse quickly when three or four other major Democrats expressed an interest, and the Democrats would be paralyzed.
Right.
I think the Democrats felt that they were paralyzed with Joe Biden. They say we got to get this liability off our shoulders, and as soon as he dropped out, oh, thank you, Joe, for caring more about your country. and then they quickly coalesced around Kamala.
So John Fund told you yesterday the Democrats are trying to not make this look like a coronation for Kamala Harris. And I think he kind of asserted yesterday, but it already is. And then a few hours after he was on the air with you, the Associated Press was reporting, well, we've talked to a bunch of delegates, and the delegates all seem to be in line with Kamala Harris, so Kamala Harris is going to get this nomination, which precludes anybody else from kind of floating their potential candidacy, right?
Yeah.
And then what is this deal that's going to happen in August with this virtual roll call? Can you give a quick explanation of this? Because they have to get this done on August 6th or 7th.
Yes, they do.
So that they can qualify the right name on the right ballot in the right states.
There are a number
in advance of the actual convention in Chicago.
Because of early voting, which Democrats wanted, a number of states now have early voting. So you can vote, you know, 2 weeks ahead of time in some states, even earlier than that in others. You can vote 2 weeks early here in Washington. In Washington, our primary is the 6th, but many people got their ballots last Friday. And so you've got, you know, 2.5 weeks to vote. So looking forward, because of that, you have to have a certified candidate on the ballot via requirements of state law in many states. So they need to do their virtual roll call quickly. And that's another reason they didn't want any uncertainty. The Democrats said, you know, the minute we get Biden out of the race, we need absolute certitude about who our nominee is going to be. And in order to keep this from looking like a palace coup, Barack Obama, I think John Fund is ahead of the crowd on this, and people say, well, I wonder why Obama didn't endorse, but while Nancy Pelosi and others did. It was all to show that, well, all right, we're all either on board or we're getting on board. And by waiting for a couple of days before endorsing, then Obama looks like he wasn't in on it when, of course, I think there were four people who made this happen. One of them is Chuck Schumer, the Senate leader in the Democrats. The other is his House counterpart, Hakeem Jeffries. The third is the woman who ran Congress and still has formidable influence, Nancy Pelosi, who is no longer the speaker, or because the Democrats are no longer the majority and is no longer the Democratic leader. She handed the gavel to Congressman Jeffries from New York. But she is basically the doyenne of the Democratic Party under the Capitol Dome. And then there's Obama, who is the most influential Democrat outside the Capitol Dome and outside 1600 Pennsylvania. I think all four of them had a meeting of minds that there is no way that Joe Biden could lead that ticket in November to victory. And victory is everything. You know, keeping the power is everything. And so Joe Biden was, you know, told, you know, you can be the celebrated patron saint and chairman emeritus of this party, a hero, or we'll just make you look like a blithering fool and complete idiot if you're not walking out the door. I mean, I don't think it came down to those words, but I think, as I said on yesterday's show, I think it would have started to get very ugly for Biden if he had not left.
Talk about getting right to the nitty-gritty and the finish line on this, too. And now Trump's saying, we got to start all over. Oh, John, this is going to get crazy. Are we going to go after each other, try to find more files, more court time against Trump?
Oh, guaranteed. But they've already turned over every rock with Trump, and when there was nothing under the rock, they'd just pick it up and throw it at him anyway.
Right. Do you think the public just says, come on, we know about Trump. We know about Kamala Harris. Just have your campaigns. Go with it. Don't keep digging stuff up. You know, we're all burnt out.
And I think that again, there is going to be this celebrated pageantry about what an undiscovered, uncut gem, unpolished gem Kamala turns out to be, that she was suffering under the shadow of Biden, being loyal to him, keeping a low profile, in part because when she kept a high profile, she looked foolish in the public eye. We'll play the Lester Holt interview coming up here to remind people just what she's like when she's on her own. Now she is ready, you know, like a chrysalis, you know, like a butterfly emerging from the pupa of the vice presidency. She is ready to take America and fly forward.
And we're hearing, of course, when you started, the campaign boost that you got already at 100 million, you say more. And ABC is reporting over 50% of those donations are people that have never donated before.
Yes. Yes. No, this is the closest thing I can compare this to is after the outrageous, preposterous criminal trial, Donald Trump, results in that guilty verdict over supposedly 34 felonies. The reaction to that was, I think, over $60 million came in the next 48 hours, and almost half of it came from new donors. With Biden out of the picture, a lot of people who either thought Biden couldn't win or just didn't feel inspired enough to part with any of their money to help the guy, who are Democrats, are so energized by the chance that maybe we're not going to lose after all.
Yeah, and maybe
we're not going to lose after all. So they go with Biden.
Maybe the heavy hitter.
Or they go with Kamala.
Yeah, maybe the heavy hitter Democratic donors were being told, yeah, we're working on it. Yeah, we're working on it. Just wait, just wait. And then, of course, they unraveled this and Biden made his announcement. And then, boom, all of a sudden these large donations come in, or a lot of donations come in.
This is what convinced the four horsemen of Biden's apocalypse. Again, Obama, Pelosi, Schumer, and Hakeem Jeffries. What convinced them that he had to go is the major donors in the Democratic Party. We're talking about people who give $3 million, $5 million, $10 million, $20 million. They closed their wallets. They just said, we're not supporting this. We're not funding this. Now, they say, we're opening them back up. And again, it's just because, not because of Kamala, it's because it's not Biden. And they're thinking, maybe we got a shot at this after all. Does she have a shot? Of course she has a shot. But Joe Biden had three major liabilities. And Kamala has two of the three. And we'll go over all that a little later on in the show. As I said, we're also doing scrutinizing just how stunningly vulnerable and open to attack President Trump was at the rally in Butler, Pennsylvania. It is, or earlier this month, it is stunning that he was not killed and that more people weren't killed and injured. The latest report we are getting, this comes from Republican Senator Josh Hawley from Missouri, is that there had been law enforcement stationed on the roof of this building, the so-called American Glass Research Building Number 6, or AGR Building Number 6. But the person on the roof left because of the heat. Quote, the whistleblower alleges that at least one individual was specifically assigned to the roof of the AGR building number 6 for the duration of the rally, but this person abandoned his or her post due to the hot weather. The whistleblower further alleges that concerns over the heat prompted law enforcement to forego patrolling building number 6 and instead station security personnel inside the building. Again, this is from Senator Josh Hawley, quoting a whistleblower, quote, with direct knowledge of Secret Service planning for the event, who alleges there was supposed to be a law enforcement presence on the roof that day, close quote. Yesterday, Kim Cheadle, the Secret Service director, appeared before Congress, and it was ugly for her. And again, what was brought out in this hearing, you know, a lot of the times it's tempting to think that committee hearings in Congress are all about, you know, people making, you know, staged remarks, trying to be dramatic, trying to catch the attention of the cameras, et cetera, et cetera. There was some real substance that came out in this, which leaves you wondering, is there any agency in the federal government under this administration that is not completely dysfunctional? You'll hear those details coming up. And yes, this is day number 2 of our Take the Trip and Keep the Cash contest. This week, the trip is to Napa. At 8:05, I will be giving you the secret word of the morning. And when I give you that word at 8:05, all you have to do is text it to our regular call-in number, 206-421-5757. You do that, and you'll be automatically entered to win that contest drawing at the end of the week. It's 21 minutes after 6. Philip J. Vandervoort III can't wait to provide you with a scintillating social media sweep. Tuesday edition of the radio program of record. Philip J. Vandervoort III standing by with the social media sweep. What do we got?
Well, we'll start with this one. The Four Tops, last remaining original member of the Four Tops, Abdul Duke Fakir, has passed away at the age of 88. His family reported he was one of the four in the group that started off as the Four Aims. AIMS was the first name for the group instead of the Four Tops. But Abdul Duke Fakir, Levi Stubbs, Obie Benson, Lawrence Payton formed in the mid-50s as high schoolers in Detroit. But to avoid confusion with a popular Ames Brothers spelled A-M-E-S,
yes.
They had to switch it up. And they would become synonymous with Detroit's sound of young America and Motown.
40 years, Four Tops.
So he passes away at the age of 88. God bless you, Abdul Duke Fakir and the rest of the Four Tops.
All right. So help develop what we call the Motown sound.
Bingo, right? Yeah. Them and the Temptations, and I guess
the Supremes.
The Supremes, Diana Ross would be the other ones, and were the cornerstones of the Motown sound. So
Stevie Wonder.
Marvin Gaye. You know, we do the social media sweep sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. And in the news, you were just talking about this in the last segment regarding the Kamala Harris candidacy and her inside track now, pretty much a foregone conclusion that she's your Democratic Party nominee for president in 2024. One of the people I follow on social media is a black police officer named Dion Joseph. His personal profile on social media says, not left, not right, just real. Views do not reflect the policies of the department I work for, and I don't even think he gives it out. But he's somebody I follow regularly. He writes, I don't care about the approach to debating and campaigning against Kamala Harris as someone who's a conservative. And he writes, I don't care who she slept with. I don't care about her laugh. I'm not going to dehumanize her or disrespect her based on her personal life. Who doesn't have a past? Who is a grown,
by the way,
adult.
You'll notice the other party doesn't extend that courtesy to Donald Trump.
Great point, yeah. He writes, don't care if she's too black for some and not black enough for others. My decision to not even consider her is based solely on the following. And he goes into these lists. She created the bail fund for rioters in 2020 over
rioters,
the George Floyd
yes.
rioters. Yeah. She supported two propositions in California that exacerbated crime and made it incredibly difficult for law enforcement to stop crime.
Yes.
No cash bail. He says that's what put Californians in danger. She was tasked with solving the border crisis, as you pointed out.
How'd that go?
Yeah. She engages in race baiting and fear mongering, which lets me know she has zero solutions to the many issues Americans are facing right now. Mm-hmm. She's even farther to the left than Joe Biden. He writes, I'm not opposed to her because she's a woman. I'd gladly and without pause vote for a woman for president. Some of the greatest leaders I've worked for in my career were women. Just can't vote for this one because of who she is, not her gender. And then another person pointed out something similar. She's a former guest of yours, Abigail Schreier. She wrote a book mm-hmm. called Irreversible Damage.
Yes.
The Transgender Craze Seducing Our Daughters. Abigail Schreier posted, if Republicans want to defeat Kamala Harris, they should cut out all the chest-thumping misogyny, the cracks about her sexual history, etc. It will energize her base more than ours. They should simply remind the public, Kamala is our border czar.
Yeah.
So there's a couple of, I thought, great social media posts related to how you approach this campaign.
It's a wonderful way of putting it. You know, ignore the cheap shots. Ignore the easy shots because they're cheap and easy. And go with the important shots. You're upset about the border? She's the border czar. And as we learned yesterday, while she served as border czar, she never so much as had a single conversation with the border chief, Raul Ortiz. Anyway, we got a lot more on this coming around the corner here. The Commute with Carlson, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Yes, whenever you're talking about Kamala Harris, just remind her, remind everybody about her and her record. Because the great benefit about running against Vice President Harris is that she's one half of the Biden-Harris administration, and that's the record you're running against, the Biden record. The results of Biden on the economy, the results of Biden-Harris on the border, the results overseas. Are we more respected or less respected today by our adversaries abroad? And how respected do you think Kamala Harris will be? That's what you focus on. That's where they're most vulnerable. They've got a record of failure. You know, they're congratulating each other about all the legislation that Biden signed, or more to the point, the executive orders that he signed without addressing the fact that most of these policies failed terribly. And as a result, people paying more at the grocery store. They're paying more at the gas pump. They are paying more virtually every aspect of their life. Because things are about 19%, 20% more expensive today than they were when he took office. Have your incomes rate gone up 20% during that time? We were energy self-sufficient. In fact, we were actually exporting energy to other countries. Those are now the good old days because we're not energy self-sufficient anymore. And if Biden-Harris had their way, we never would be again. And speaking of the border, here, just to remind you, this was Kamala Harris sitting with Lester Holt without a teleprompter.
Do you have any plans to visit the border?
I'm here in Guatemala today. At some point, you know, we are going to the border. We've been to the border. So this whole thing about the border, we've been to the border.
You haven't been to the border.
I haven't been to Europe. And I don't understand the point that you're making.
The point is that you're not at the border. The point is that you've never been to the border. And now we know that while she was serving as border czar, she never took the time to so much as have a single conversation with the Border Patrol chief, Raul Ortiz, or the man who replaced him last year. So that's the real Kamala Harris. That's what people will eventually see. There's going to be about 30 days where there's a huge buildup, and you're going to see her popularity spike for a while, and you're going to see the donations through the roof like they are right now. Again, which is more an expression of the fact that Joe Biden isn't there than the fact that she is there. Any Democrat who took over for Biden would have had a similar euphoric response to their candidacy. It's basically, oh, thank God you're not Biden if you're a Democrat. You know, thank goodness yours is the name that'll be on the ballot. So don't panic about that. There is plenty of time to go in this campaign. And, you know, the Republicans had a wonderful convention. Now the Democrats will probably have an interesting convention.
Does Biden finish the year?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are you concerned?
By the way, if you're a Republican, you know, I understand the logic. I understand the logic in saying, well, if he is unfit to run for president, he sure as heck is unfit to serve as president.
Are you concerned that he still has power for signatures and doing duty or whatever?
Mm-hmm.
So whatever Kamala Harris campaign and the Democrats, take it to Joe. Take it to the president. We need signatures and just.
Basically, everything that Joe Biden does from here to the end of his president, from here until November.
Right.
Okay, from here until November 6th, every single thing that Biden does will be to help her.
Mm-hmm.
What advances the Kamala Harris campaign? So basically, that's his job.
But they could bring things to him saying, would you sign this, Mr. President? This is
yeah.
a help. And he won't have to look at it. He just trusts. Oh, I trust.
Yeah. Kamala's going to need this. This
right.
will help Kamala.
Does that worry you, John? I know our listeners are thinking, mm-hmm. oh, this is going to get crazy.
Again, Biden is, you know, that's the deal that was offered to Biden. You can go out a hero or you can stay in a zero. Hero or zero? You know, you can be known as the guy who beat Donald Trump and then gave it right back to him. that's what he was like. And you'll be despised as the man who lost the House and Senate for the Democrats. They've already, or the Republicans gained seats in the House and the Democrats ended up losing the Senate. Look, here is, and I mentioned this yesterday, here's the reality, though. When Trump wins this election in November, they're going to turn on Biden anyway. You know, they're going to do an autopsy. How did Trump win? And it's going to get down to, well, because if Biden hadn't insisted on staying in this race until the very last moment, and prevented the Democrats from being able to put together a campaign, you know, a fully fledged and operating campaign in plenty of time to beat him. If Biden hadn't just been so selfish and so self-centered, he and that wife with her air quotes PhD, then the Democrats could have beat Trump. But no, Biden just couldn't stay away. That's he will get the recriminations when the Democrats lose in November.
What do you visualize Kamala Harris, the campaign? If you were supporting her, mm-hmm. what are three things you'd go after Trump? Age. You said yesterday they might go after his age now.
No, they'll go after his age. It won't work because Biden, technically, it wasn't his age that did him in. It was his infirmities. It was because he was wandering around with a vacant look on his face. Have you ever seen Donald Trump not laser-focused on whatever he's looking at? It's because he would lose himself in a train of thought. It was because he was utterly helpless without a teleprompter. The problem with Trump is that he sometimes overpowers the teleprompter, and instead of a 60-minute acceptance speech, we get a 90-minute.
Well, like Fund said yesterday, as your guest, he said if Trump would have stopped at 30 minutes, he had it. But then
if he'd stopped at 1 hour, he would have had it.
Right.
And again, it wasn't a disaster. It would have been pitch perfect if he would have 30 minutes on what happened in Butler, Pennsylvania, surviving an assassin's bullets, and another 30 minutes on where we go from here, and wrap her up, and we're done. I have said this, and it's advice I have given to candidates and others who are in the public eye many, many times, because I have given thousands of speeches over the years. If you give a good short speech, people will think you gave a good speech.
Less means more, yeah.
If you give a good long speech, people will think you just gave a long speech.
Every morning you have your rewind show that Phil and I put together, highlights from previous shows. Listening today, I'm thinking, what were we talking about 4 weeks ago, John? 3 weeks ago, 2 weeks ago, 1 week ago, and now. Talk about major changes in headlines.
Well, we have seen more head-turning political drama in the last few weeks. It's not even been a month. In the last few weeks than we have seen in this country since the spring of 1968, where from early in March, President Johnson stuns the nation. He's giving a nationally televised address on the status of the Vietnam War, and then finishes the speech by saying, you know, because of the need to focus on this conflict, I will not seek and I will not accept another term as your president. And boom, people were shocked. It completely turned the race and presidential race in 1968 upside down. Keep in mind, Johnson had won a massive 43-44 state landslide in 1964, beating Barry Goldwater. And he had 2-1 Democrat majorities in the House and Senate. That's how we got Medicare and Medicaid, because you had huge majorities. And they were finally able to get through civil rights legislation that was blocked by Johnson's own party, the segregationist Southern Democrats. So anyway, in March, you have Johnson backing out of the race. And just a couple weeks later, Martin Luther King is assassinated, and we have riots throughout America.
We lost Bobby Kennedy, yeah.
And then less than 2 months after that, Bobby Kennedy is assassinated after winning the California primary. It looked like he was on his way toward victory after he won the California primary. And within that very short period of time, the, quote, the 60s. Oh, then, of course, the Democratic Convention, which was televised more on the riot outside the convention hall than on the convention inside.
And that was Chicago. And where are we
Chicago
next month for the DNC?
Now, next month, we'll be in Chicago.
Wow.
So there has been more drama this summer than in any time, political drama, than at any time since late spring and summer of 68.
The station is 570 KVI. If your friends are asking what's next, what do I need to know?
This is not the History Channel, but we thought you would like that little throwback comparison. Yeah, have we ever lived through anything like this before? The answer is yeah, kind of, and it was even more dramatic and more tragic. At least the assassin's bullets did not take the life of President Trump. 54 minutes after 6 o'clock in the morning. Well, because of everything happening here at home, a lot of people haven't noticed that abroad, two big things happening regarding Israel. Number one, they are pounding Hamas and winning big time in the city of Rafah, which, of course, the liberals did not even want them to go to. And secondly, they attacked the Houthi rebels after the Houthi rebels attacked Tel Aviv. Benjamin Netanyahu is in Washington, D.C. to address a joint session of Congress. But guess who won't be there to preside? Lars Larson's going to tell us.
That is Kamala Harris. One of the few jobs the vice president has, other than being there in case something bad happens, the president, is to preside over the Senate or preside over joint sessions. She didn't show up when Netanyahu, the leader of our best ally in the Middle East, probably second best ally to Great Britain on planet Earth, and Netanyahu and his wife show up at the airport. Kamala Harris is not there. Joe Biden's not there. Anthony Blinken's not there. They send some junior league assistant to an assistant to an assistant. Mm-hmm. And then she says that I'm not presiding over a joint session because she doesn't want upstate Michigan to see her having anything to do with the leader of our second best ally, who is in the middle of a war right now, and we have American hostages being held by Hamas.
Because upstate Michigan has more Muslims than Jews.
Yep.
And the heaviest concentration of Muslims. And she's worried about that. That is why I'm told Josh Shapiro, governor of Pennsylvania, might be out of contention to be vice president, even though he'd be a perfect choice. He'd deliver the state of Pennsylvania because he's Jewish. Can you believe
a religious test that the Constitution forbids for public office, huh? That's interesting.
You don't want to miss Lars today and every day, noon to 3, hour number 2 of the commute right around the corner. Today, we have just a nice sunny summer day planned. Not too hot, not too cold. It's just going to be a nice July afternoon later on today. Welcome to the radio program of record this 23rd day of July. We haven't spent much time focusing on just how close Donald Trump came to being killed at his rally earlier this month in the farmer's field in Butler, Pennsylvania. And yesterday, Kim Cheadle, the director of the Secret Service, visited Capitol Hill. Here is just how bad the job she has done came through yesterday. Both parties want her out. Both parties found her completely unpersuasive. Representative Pat Fallon, he's a Republican from Texas, really drove home again that we aren't just lucky. Donald Trump wasn't just lucky not to have died that day. It was almost a miracle that he wasn't killed. Here he is, Representative Pat Fallon, questioning Kim Cheadle, the director of the Secret Service, who made it clear she has no plans to resign.
Chair now recognizes Mr. Fallon from Texas.
How did a 20-year-old loner with a week's notice pick the absolute best location to assassinate President Trump when the entire Secret Service missed it? Director Cheadle, in your leadership, your agency got outsmarted and outmaneuvered by a 20-year-old. How can we have any confidence that you could stop a trained professionals from a nefarious nation state?
Those are absolutely questions that we need to have.
I know the questions, but the fact of the matter is we can't have that confidence. Director, do you have the ability personally, and do you have the authority to beef up security of any of your protectees?
Yes, I do.
Okay. So were you also aware there was a credible threat President Trump was facing? He was facing a heightened security threat to a foreign adversary?
Yes.
Okay. So given that there was an increased threat to President Trump's life, was he provided a full security complement akin to what a sitting U.S. president would receive?
He was provided a full complement of security based on the threat assessment that we had.
That's not my question.
And the venue.
My question is, if he'd been the sitting president, would he have had the same security he had on July 13th, or would have been beefed up?
There is a difference between the sitting president.
So your answer is he didn't.
And continuity of government and the responsibility
that
we
have. So he did not. Okay, there wasn't a CAT team, a full CAT team on site. There wasn't counter surveillance teams on site. But this is the thing. You just said you had the ability to beef up the security. You knew about the threat, and you didn't. And that's as telling as it is chilling.
Yeah. They knew, by the way, the threat refers to Iran. And Iran has had it in for Donald Trump since we took out their terror master, General Qasem Soleimani.
And you spoke about that a little
the
over a week
architect.
Ago. Yeah.
Yes.
I think it was about a week ago.
Iran has had, they have vowed revenge when his Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, visited Seattle. He had extra security. This was after the Trump presidency. He still had extra security because of the threat from the Iranian government. They want to take out a high-profile target. The same with his former national security advisor, Mr. O'Brien. So they knew that you had a heightened threat on Donald Trump, and yet instead of additional security, he had actually lighter security. Next question. Why wasn't a Secret Service agent on that roof?
So you said, do you remember in an ABC interview you did that you didn't have people on the roof of the AGR building because you were worried about safety because of the slope?
I recall that statement.
Okay. Does the Secret Service have written policy you can share with us about slope roofs?
No.
Okay. So why'd you act like there was one? Because is it your practice to comment on enormous events of enormous national implications when you're ignorant of the facts? That's rhetorical. So here's this thing with the slopes. You go all up to like 1812. You can go to a 112, which is about as flat as you can get without it being completely flat. And you're saying that there was a danger, safety concern there. But the problem is, Director, you put your counter snipers on a 312 roof, which is steeper than the 112. And by the way, the 112 is ADA compliant. You can build a ramp for a wheelchair on a 112 roof. So these are nothing but pathetic excuses, and they make no sense, and they're a bunch of cow dung. All the law enforcement I've spoken with over the last 9 days are amazed that the AGR rooftop was not secure. And you want to know why? Because it's dangerous.
That so completely dismantles her ridiculous claim about the sloped roof. They had other Secret Service agents on other roofs with a steeper slope. And the so-called sloped roof on this building, the so-called AGR building, was ADA compliant for wheelchairs. So talk about a non-issue. Fallon, who represents North Texas, in Congress. And is a veteran, also talked about how he, last weekend, recreated the shooting position of the attacker on a similar roof and distance to see how hard it would be to make the shot. Wait until you hear this.
I have never had any long gun training in my life. I own an AR-15, and last time I shot it one time my whole life. It was 6 years ago. That is until Saturday, where we recreated the events in Savoy, Texas. We recreated what happened to Butler. I was lying prone on a slope roof at 130 yards at 6:30 at night. And I knew that he had a scope. I didn't know what kind, red dot or magnified. So I shot 8 rounds from both. You know what the result was? 15 out of 16 kill shots. And the one I missed would have hit the president's ear. That's a 94% success rate. And that shooter was a better shot than me. It is a miracle President Trump wasn't killed.
That is how lucky President Trump was. This guy was such a poor shot that anyone who has had even, you know, cursory training, rifle shooting training, would have been able to hit a target the size of President Trump from that distance. And if President Trump had not moved his head at just the right time, that bullet would have entered his, not wouldn't have nicked his ear, it would have entered his temple just below his ear. He wasn't the only Congress. Many members of Congress were just beside themselves. Another one was Nancy Mace. A little bit of a drama queen, but here she was all business. And she just wanted yes or no answers to a series of questions.
Was this a colossal failure?
It was a failure.
Yes or no? Was it a colossal failure is the question. Yes or no?
I have admitted this is a terrible.
This is a yes or no series of questions. Was this a colossal failure? Yes or no?
Yes.
Was this tragedy preventable? Yes or no?
Yes.
Has the Secret Service been transparent with this committee?
Yes.
Would you say the fact that we had to issue a subpoena to get you to show up today as being transparent, yes or no?
I have always been
yes
eager
or no. You didn't want to answer the question.
Committee.
We had to issue a subpoena to get you to show up today. That is not transparent, by the way. You stated earlier Secret Service is not political. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Would you say leaking your opening statement to Punchbowl News, Politico's Playbook, and Washington Post several hours before you sent it to this committee as being political? Yes or no?
I have no idea how my statement got out.
Well, that's bull. So, Mr. Chairman, I would like to ask unanimous consent to enter into the record articles by Punchbowl News, Political Playbook, Washington Post, all done at 5:24 a.m., 6:12 a.m., 6:34 a.m., a solid 3 to 4 hours before this committee got your statement.
Without objection, so ordered.
So, in other words, the Secret Service is just doing damage control. And, of course, they are absolutely immersed in politics. Leaking her opening statement ahead of time was to lay political groundwork. And Nancy Mace wasn't finished, and she gets even more potty mouthed here.
Have you provided all audio and video recordings in your possession to this committee, as we asked on July 15th, yes or no?
I would have to get back to you.
That is a no. You're full of today. You're just being completely dishonest.
Mr. Chairman, we have to maintain decorum in this committee.
Have you provided any and all memos to this committee that we've asked you on July 15th? Have you provided all memorandums within the Secret Service?
I would have to get back to you on
that. That is a no. You are being dishonest or lying. You're being dishonest here with this committee. These are important questions that the American people want answers to, and you're just dodging and talking around it in generalities.
And then she gets into the issue of the timeline here.
Was this attempted assassination of Donald Trump a failure of training or execution or both?
I think that those are answers that we need to examine.
Training, execution, or both? Which one?
I think those are answers.
All right. How many Secret Service personnel have lost their jobs due to this colossal failure?
At this time, none.
How many Secret Service personnel have been required to take a refresher course on how not to let people shoot Donald Trump?
Our personnel are currently operational. We are examining the facts of this investigation, and we will make the changes necessary.
What time did law enforcement become aware that there was an individual on the roof with a clear line of sight to President Trump?
I am still verifying timelines.
Of course. 9 days in, you have no answers. How many minutes went by between the time law enforcement saw and took photos of Crooks and the shooting? How many minutes?
I am still verifying
57
timelines.
57 minutes.
57 minutes. And nobody took assertive action. A local police officer climbed the ladder to the roof where Senator Josh Hawley said somebody was assigned, not just supposed to be there, but was assigned to be on the roof, and it got too hot, so they left. So a police officer who is in the interior of the building climbs up the ladder to the roof, encounters, does not confront, but is encountered by the shooter, who aims his rifle in his direction. So he scampered back down the ladder. And that is when the shooter, perhaps only because he was rushed, started firing those shots, winged President Trump without wounding him seriously, but killed Corey Comporator, former fire chief, died. His body over the bodies of his family that he was shielding, and two other people seriously wounded. Jamie Raskin is a ardently liberal Democrat. He's also a January 6th committee member. No fan whatsoever of Donald Trump or the Republicans, but he had this to say to her. Or about Kim Cheadle.
And I don't want to add to the director's terrible, horrible, no good, very bad day, but I will be joining the chairman in calling for the resignation of the director, just because I think that this relationship is irretrievable at this point, and I think that the director has lost the confidence of Congress at a very urgent and tender moment in the history of the country, and we need to very quickly move beyond this.
Goodness sakes, this is 10 days ago. Does this woman, Kim Cheadle, does this woman have any sense of honor? You know, it was brought up yesterday that the man who was appointed to be director of the Secret Service when Ronald Reagan was shot by a spectator holding a 22 caliber pistol, in possession of a 22 caliber pistol, just again a mentally ill guy trying to get an actress to notice him, he stepped down. You know, the Secret Service failed to protect the president from being shot, so he stepped down. Look how this woman, Kim Cheadle, is doing everything she can to try and keep her job, saying, I am taking accountability. Do you know what that means when you, in Washington, D.C., when you take accountability? By saying it, you don't have to actually do anything because you said you're taking accountability. That's the accountability. You say that you're taking it. And that absolves you from having to actually do anything. Only in Washington, D.C. does that make any sense whatsoever. People are just tired of this. They're just a complete and total lack of accountability for a job poorly done. And I'm guessing she will have to resign probably within the next day or two. But it's like she's dragged kicking and screaming. This nation would have been kicking and screaming if those bullets had found their target and we lost President Trump that day. It's 21 minutes after 7 o'clock. Philip J. Vandervoort III right around the corner with a social media sweep on the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Man, I remember this song. Everyone just marveled at the fact that Peter Frampton could make a guitar talk. Do you feel like I do? Oh, it was a great times. Anyway.
That was peak 1970s right
there,
wasn't it?
Peak 70s. Frampton comes alive. All right. Philip J. Vandervoort III, what on earth is going on in the social media world?
Social media sweep sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. Kamala Harris, her first day yesterday as the presumptive Democratic presidential nominee, and she got to host a White House reception for NCAA sports champions. Did you hear about this? Well, let's listen to how Kamala Harris fared with the NCAA student athletes.
Our president, Joe Biden, wanted to be here today. He is feeling much better and recovering fast, and he looks forward to getting back on the road. And I wanted to say a few words about our president. Joe Biden's legacy of accomplishment over the past 3 years is unmatched in modern history. In one term, he has already, yes, you may clap.
Ouch. Those are the college-age voters that Biden and Harris are supposed to inspire, right? Those are the voters that support Democrats almost by default. And that's the crowd reaction to praising Biden.
Well, if he was doing so well, if he's accomplished so much, why was he on the path to losing?
Yeah, yeah.
Why did they bump him aside? By the way, he gets a phone call. Hey, Joe, thanks for dropping out. By the way, your COVID's going away.
So Kamala Harris kind of had to do the Jeb Bush please clap moment there in front of all the NCAA student athletes. And then Katie Pavlich is Town Hall.
Townhall.com.
Townhall.com, yeah, writer. Frequent contributor on Fox News Channel. And she had posted about what you and Lars Larson were talking about here almost a half an hour ago. Prime Minister of Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu, arrives in the U.S. Nobody from the White House is there to greet him. And that Vice President Kamala Harris, as the president of the Senate, will boycott Netanyahu's speech to the joint session of Congress tomorrow. And Katie Pavlich wrote, whether you like Netanyahu's politics or not, Netanyahu is the leader of the only democracy in the Middle East and a key ally.
The head of state.
Really telling and short-sighted, especially given that Kamala Harris is the Democrats' nominee for the president of the United States now. And then this final one. This one is a little frightening that the sarcasm and the reality are this close together. But this one was kind of written tongue-in-cheek by somebody I follow on social media who's got a big following, 368,000 followers, a libertarian-minded person, Bridget Fetisi. And she wrote, America is wondering whether their president is alive or dead, and that's like the third weirdest thing that's happened in the past 9 days. So, like I said, when the sarcasm gets a little too close to the reality.
Yes, there you go. It is coming up here on 7:30, the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. More on Kamala at 8 o'clock coming up, which is when you want to be listening anyway, since our Take the Trip, Keep the Cash secret word of the morning is going to be disclosed for you. And when we come right back, well, I'm going to be talking about my endorsements, statewide endorsements. We're going to roll them out slow here on the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. She couldn't survive that segment I did on her, Kim Cheadle. Well, it was a pretty easy prediction to make a few minutes ago. Again, I played some excerpts from this brutal hearing, congressional hearing, where bipartisan majorities, both parties, just down on Kim Cheadle and the terrible job she did, the Secret Service did that day, and the terrible job that she's done since that day. She clearly is doing everything she could to try and keep her job. She finally gave it up yesterday, or excuse me, gave it up a few
3 minutes
ago,
according to the Associated Press. Posted at 7:33 a.m. Pacific time. 3.5 minutes ago, Secret Service Director Kim Cheadle resigns after the assassination attempt against former President Donald Trump at a Pennsylvania rally.
It's about 9 days and 57 minutes too late, but at least it came.
Bye-bye.
Adios.
And she will not be missed.
Especially not after that House hearing yesterday.
Again, no, that hearing just completely dismantled everything about the ridiculous excuses that she was giving for why that building was not adequately surveilled and why no one was there.
I know you got a tight show, and like we've got so much to talk about. Can you play that real quick clip, though, about the one gentleman that is not any kind of a good shooter, and he went back to the site where that
the last
rally was and decided to...
The Texas congressman?
Yeah, Texas congressman decided to grab a rifle and take some shots, and he has no real experience and the results.
You know what? I put it in the so-called...
I'll pull it up. I think I've got it right
here. ...wastebasket
here
so I could make room for the other video
ready
or audio.
Because this was such a discussion among people around here, those who are hunting, who have guns,
but
whatever.
But it was Congressman Pat Fallon. Congressman Pat Fallon...
He tried to recreate the circumstances of the Pennsylvania attempted assassination from a building with a slope roof and a target and 140 yards range, something along those lines. Here's what he told the hearing yesterday.
And wanted to know how hard it would be to hit a target from that area, which raises the question of if someone like him could make a shot like this, then why on earth wouldn't that building have been more tightly surveilled and secured? Go ahead.
I have never had any long gun training in my life. I own an AR-15, and last time I shot it one time my whole life. It was 6 years ago. That is until Saturday, where we recreated the events in Savoy, Texas. We recreated what happened to Butler. I was lying prone on a slope roof at 130 yards at 6:30 at night. And I knew that he had a scope, but I didn't know what kind, red dot or magnified. So I shot 8 rounds from both. You know what the result was? 15 out of 16 kill shots. And the one I missed would have hit the president's ear. That's a 94% success rate. And that shooter was a better shot than me. It is a miracle President Trump wasn't killed.
It's just chilling every time I hear that.
And he's right. I mean, you know, hyperbole, exaggeration, distortion, occasionally lying, not uncommon in Congress, especially in televised hearings. But everything he said was correct. Notice that he said he got 15 out of 16 kill shots. Not that I hit the target, like I hit his arm, I hit his foot. 15 out of 16 kill shots, and he said the one that missed him hit his ear.
And Trump said the only reason he was turning at the time because he had a chart that was being displayed and wanted to point to something. John, this is a miracle.
It really,
oh my gosh.
It really is stunning that we did not lose President Trump that day. And it is even more than I had thought. So why there isn't this sense of absolute alarm and why this Secret Service director was not, you know, stepping down immediately and expressing utter dismay that an error like this occurred on her watch. Yeah, again, I don't know. That's just Washington. You know, something terrible happens on your watch. You should have known better. You should have taken responsibility. And what do? You say, I'm taking full responsibility while avoiding any responsibility, trying to keep your job.
And if you're just tuning in to KVI, the breaking news, John, here.
Kim Cheadle, the director of the Secret Service, has tendered her resignation. No surprise at all. Again, in one of the most partisan atmospheres, the summer of an election year, on Capitol Hill, both Democrats and Republicans came together, and the chairman and the ranking Democrat on the committee both calling for her to leave or be fired. and she resigned. So anyway, it is 41 minutes after 7 o'clock in the morning. Did you get your ballot? While all this is going on, we have an election going on here in Washington.
I looked at the voter's guide last night for a little bit.
And I think a lot of people, you know, doing the same thing, and I'm getting peppered with questions from our listeners saying, are you going to post your endorsements? And because I was at the national convention and was focused on that, and then I was going to do it on Sunday. And that turned out to be a very busy day. I have not gotten to them. I have a very good idea. As you know, I rarely, if ever, have a completely partisan ballot, which annoys some people, but I really do believe in looking at each individual who's running and picking the best person and whose values and views conform to my own on many of these offices. Plus, can they do the job itself? Even if someone agrees with me, if I don't think that they can credibly do the job, then I won't endorse them. So one endorsement, I'm going to start with statewide races. So everyone in the state of Washington who's a registered voter, plus I'm afraid probably lots of others as well, will be getting a ballot, and they will all list these statewide races. The race for U.S. Senator. You have Maria Cantwell going for a fifth term. I think it's time for some fresh air and a fresh face in the U.S. Senate. These are not supposed to be jobs for life. And Maria has been there for 24 years. I think Raul Garcia is the best Republican candidate we have had in over a decade running for the U.S. Senate. And I think that he's going to join me at 8:05. What he did last week during the convention was just extraordinary. I've not seen a candidate for political office do this. But to call attention to the fentanyl issue and his support for federal legislation, which he'll tell us more about, he walked from Yakima County to the floating bridge in Seattle, King County. That's about 120 miles in 6 days. He walked an average of 20 miles a day for 6 consecutive days. And he, along with Ginny Burton, who we've had on the show many times, who kicked drugs after receiving yet another term in prison for drugs, and takes a more or less tough love approach to getting people off of drugs. She and Raul will be joining me. I think Raul Garcia has the right temperament. I love his life story. Came here from Cuba. And achieved the American dream. Became a doctor, a successful doctor, ER doctor, and then owned his own practice. He also was our go-to guy on all things COVID. And unlike Anthony Fauci and many others like him, he didn't have to, quote, update or, quote, revise what he said about COVID and preparation and cautions and measures to mitigate COVID 3 months later. What he said about how to address the virus remains consistent and timely today. In other words, he got it right, while so many of the other public health experts got it dreadfully wrong. So my first endorsement goes out to Dr. Raul Garcia for the United States Senate. When we come back, my choice for governor. And then later on in the 8 o'clock hour, my choice for some of the other statewide offices. Believe it or not, we have more statewide offices than any other state in the union. 9 separate statewide offices. And we'll start with governor. Coming right up, The Commute with Carlson, Talk Radio 570 KVI. It's Boeing time on The Commute, 747. And then at 8:05, our Take the Trip, Keep the Cash contest, Word of the Morning. And Dr. Raul Garcia, hopefully our next U.S. senator, will be joining me for a few minutes. Busy morning on The Commute with Carlson. I will be posting my endorsements for most races, at least statewide and congressional district races, tomorrow. And then we will follow up with some legislative endorsements later on in the week. My first endorsement for the U.S. Senate statewide, of course, went to Dr. Raul Garcia, who will join me in a moment here on The Commute. For governor, this choice was fairly simple, even though there are some good candidates running. By the way, a total of 28 people are running for governor. 28 people are on your ballot.
Yeah, I read one voter guide profile, and it sounded like what somebody would have posted for a dating app instead of a voter's guide. Kind of concerned me.
My choice here, and it's not an anti-choice, meaning I'm not going for this person because he's not someone else. I'm going for Dave Reichert because I simply think he would make a really good governor right now. I think the major issues facing Washington are crime, drugs, homelessness, and a lack of accountability. And those are three issues that I think Dave Reichert would be very strong on. Plus, I think that the appointments he would make would be far better than the appointments that the other Democrat, than the Mark Mullett and Bob Ferguson are the two Democrats running. And I think that Reichert would make better appointments than Ferguson. I think Mark Mullett has been a great state senator. He'd be an okay governor. He'd be a huge improvement over Jay Inslee and a huge improvement over the very slippery and arch partisan and less than candid, less than transparent Bob Ferguson, and the most woke of the candidates. But I don't think he would be as good a governor as Dave Reichert, who's more conservative on many of these issues. So if there was a time when a Republican could get elected governor, it would be a year like this when people are fed up over things like this and a government that's just grown out of control and is completely dysfunctional. Can you think of a single area of state government that runs better now than it did 5 years ago or 10 years ago? Dave Reichert, Semi Byrd, I think, should run for another office. And regroup and come back. He won't have a large vote total this time out. But I think that Dave Reichert will, and he stands the Republicans' best chance of winning. So Dave Reichert for governor here in Washington. Your comments always welcome at 206-421-5757. Hour number three of The Commute, right around the corner, including the contest. On one of the busiest news months of my career, and I'm guessing probably going stretching all the way back to 1968, the spring and summer of 68. Never have we seen so much political upheaval in this country, including the historic upheaval of a candidate for president who has the nominees to secure the nomination leaving the race. Never had that one before. Joe Biden stepping out and Kamala Harris now stepping in and quickly securing the Democratic nomination. She's got more than enough delegates to secure a first ballot victory. So with that going on, we've got a busy third hour of the commute coming your way, starting with our Take the Trip or Keep the Cash contest every day this summer. At this time, I give you the secret word of the day. You have until 9 o'clock a.m. to text it to 206-421-5757. There will be a daily drawing for a $50 Daniel's Broiler gift card. And at the end of the week, a drawing for a vacation to Napa. We're talking, they've got several wine tours of wineries set up for you. Four nights in Napa. Just a great place to relax there. Monterey, Carmel, Napa. So anyway, that's coming your way. But if you don't like wine and you don't like Napa, you can just keep the cash. That's $3,000. So this contest presented in concert with our friends at Quinault Beach Resort and Casino in Ocean Shores. That's Quinault Beach Resort and Casino in Ocean Shores, right off the main drag. A fantastic place, by the way. A great place to go and kick back and relax. And a reminder also that you can enter this contest four times a day. Right now, between 8 and 9, during the Mark Lee and Van Camp show, a different word between 11 and noon, and then on Lars Larson's show at 1 o'clock, and then on Ari's show at 4 o'clock.
So that's four different entries.
Four different. You can enter four times a week, four times a day, 20 times a week.
For the trip to Napa.
For the trip to Napa, okay? So, your word today is bottle, B-O-T-T-L-E. That's bottle, B-O-T-T-L-E. Text the word bottle to 206-421-5757, and you are entered. All right? Okay. Two very good friends of mine, two people I greatly admire, are joining me for a few minutes here on the John Carlson Show. One of them is Dr. Raul Garcia, who is running for the United States Senate and embarked on something I've never before seen, a candidate in all my life. He walked over 120 miles from Yakima County to the floating bridge, the overpass of the floating bridge in Seattle, to call attention to the fentanyl crisis and his support of legislation to combat fentanyl and fentanyl dealers. Do we have the good doctor with us, Philip J. Vandervoort III?
Still trying to get Dr. Garcia on the line, but Ginny's here.
Okay.
So we'll keep trying to get Dr. Garcia.
And I want to talk to Ginny. Ginny Burton, who we've had on the show many times, is a young woman who initially found out about her. She was profiled by Eric Johnson as someone who literally was the poster girl for methamphetamine addiction and how it can ravage your appearance and what it can do to you. She did stints in jail. She was embarked on many crimes to keep her addiction going. And finally, she got her act together because she was behind bars and she knew that it was either death, imprisonment, or get clean. She got clean. and ended up graduating from the University of Washington. And I'll always remember Eric Johnson's side-by-side shots, her mug shot, which looks scary, and her graduation day, raising her diploma triumphantly overhead from the University of Washington. Just a wonderful picture. She since has gone on to mentor and counsel other drug users, people like her, to get them out of that same situation. And along the way, tragedy has re-entered her life. She embarked with Dr. Garcia on this walk. And in the middle, and again, she's going on this multi-day walk with him and others, and got the worst news any parent could receive. She lost her son. Her son took his life. And she joins us here on the John Carlson Show. Ginny, how are you?
Good morning, John. Well, I suppose I'm as good as anybody could be in this situation. Definitely am very sad.
No, we talked about this. Your son had been facing mental health challenges for a long time. And the demons finally overswept him, and he took his life. You and I talked last week when I was in Milwaukee for the convention, and you made the decision that you were going to go ahead and finish out the walk.
Yeah.
Tell us about that. That decision, the walk. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, I mean, as we all know, I fight pretty hard to bring awareness to a lot of things and this whole fentanyl crisis, this war that we're having on our own U.S. soil that we seem to be ignoring as a society. It's huge. It's hugely. It's impacting so many lives, and I've lost so many friends and family members to the opioid crisis. So it was important for me to start it with Raul to begin with. But, you know, on my very first day of the walk, my husband, after dropping me off in Ellensburg, because I joined a little bit, I joined about 70 miles into their trip. And my husband called me when he got home, and he had found my son. And it was devastating for me. So, and as you said, like I was a drug addict for a very long time, and not just meth, but heroin and cocaine as well. And so, you know, I've navigated my emotions, especially around big traumatic losses and experiences with drugs pretty consistently in the past. And so, you know, when I got clean almost 12 years ago, I started to, you know, sort of map the route of how I was going to stay clean, even in the worst of circumstances. And so, you know, I had pondered more than once over the years, like, what happens if, what happens if, what happens if I lose one of my children? So I had been planning in my mind, you know, that I would be packing a backpack, because I think one of the things that people don't know about me is that I started to hike and climb mountains. And that's one of the ways that I have been able to manage, you know, not going back to addiction when things are really hard. And so, I knew that I would pack a backpack if something happened to one of my kids. And so I honestly feel like it was kind of a God thing that I was already out there. And so I knew that I needed to keep walking. And one thing also, and I thought about this during my trip, is that my son is a walker and a runner, and that's how he managed his stuff too. And those are things that we did together. So I felt like it would honor him while simultaneously helping me to appropriately manage my emotions around such an extreme loss.
How's it going?
It's good. I came home, Sunday night, and as I expected, as I got closer to my house, things were heavier. You know, I try to kind of refrain, but it's almost impossible to. So he hung himself in the tree right behind my bedroom, so you can see it right out my bedroom window. And well, there's a really honestly beautiful thing, though, Phil, is that when I look out there, it doesn't feel like a dark place. It feels like he is here with me. And, you know, I just made a decision to turn around sort of, I think, typical thinking. And instead of, you know, being afraid or feeling like this was something that I needed to get away from, I recognized that my son, you know, just like you see on the side of a freeway when somebody loses their life or on a street corner, my husband memorialized the area, put some flowers there. He's going to be, it's a big cedar tree. He's going to hang up a little box, and he's bought some cards so that we can put prayers and wishes, and there's a chair out there so we can talk to my son. So honestly, I feel like his presence is here. And what I can tell you about my son is that he was brilliant. He was a self-taught math genius. He was brilliant, computer science guy, like wonderful attitude, just really funny. And somewhere over the last 2 years, something sprung up in him with his mental health, and he was not necessarily the same person. And so he was really feeling tortured over the period of time. And he clearly was struggling with suicidal ideation. I was able to find some of his psychiatric stay safety plans and things like that. And I was able to read some stuff in his journal. And not that it makes it any easier, but it gave me some insight into what he was struggling with. So the walk for me became dual purposed. It was definitely about those who have lost their life and the struggles that we're having here in the country with fentanyl, but also, you know, just me personally really underestimating the power of mental health. And as we all know, those two things play right into each other.
Yeah, yeah. Is there anything we can do for you?
Prayers, honestly, lots and lots of prayers, you know, not just for me, but for anybody that's struggling. If my story, like, I think reaches anybody, like, what I would love is that if we could make sure that we're taking things seriously, even if we don't think somebody is being serious, and they express feelings of hopelessness or wanting to die, doing everything that we can to get that person connected with behavioral health. Because I'm going to tell you something, I would happily be burdened for the rest of my life with my son feeling that taking time out of my day, as opposed to him not being here anymore. So sometimes, you know, when we feel like we have things going on, the challenges that somebody else is experiencing sometimes seem untimely or seem like they're taking time out of our day, but consider that that could potentially be their last day. So another thing that I would love to see people do, reach out to me or Dr. Raul Garcia on social media, walk for those who have lost their lives to fentanyl and mental health. Take a video, send it to us. I don't know the email address to the fentanylwalk.com, but I believe that there's contact information on fentanylwalk.com. And I believe that you can easily send those videos, because we would like to honor that, you know, all the folks that are choosing to walk for this cause, because I think it's really important. And, you know, and I normally don't endorse politicians, but I'm going to tell you, I truly believe that if we can get Dr. Raul Garcia elected into the Senate, I think that he will bring people like me to the table so we can create more intentional solutions, not the kind of solutions, John, that keep people flailing out, not keeping people stuck in their circumstances, not funding nonprofits that aren't delivering services, but actually focusing on ways to bring our family members back into the stream of life. You know, even if it's post-conviction, right? Because
I get that.
Yeah, because we've got to become the village.
Well, Ginny, again, our hearts are with you, and so are our prayers. And I know that Dr. Garcia will cherish that endorsement from you because he knows the gravity of it. We'll be talking with him a little later here on the Morning Commute, and we want to thank you for taking the time to tell us why you participated in the walk, the fentanyl walk, mental health awareness walk with Dr. Garcia. And we will be talking to him shortly about the walk from his perspective and what it means to his candidacy for the U.S. Senate as well. Ginny, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, John. I appreciate you.
Okay. Well, we appreciate you. We love you. And we hope your heart mends very soon. You deserve happiness. For all
your time. Thank you so much. I love you guys too.
Trying to do for other people. That's Ginny Burton joining us here on The Commute with Carlson. Philip J. Vandervoort III is around the corner. His favorite segment of the day, social media from socialists. And then we will be joined by Dr. Raul Garcia. It's a very busy, busier than I thought day on The John Carlson Show. Talk Radio 570 KVI. 25 minutes after 8 o'clock in the morning on the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI, this 23rd day of July. It's going to be a nice one. Philip J. Vandervoort III, your favorite segment of the day, social media from socialists. What do you got, sir?
Look around the state and see which politicians, elected officials, are supporting Kamala Harris as the presumptive Democratic Party presidential nominee. The social media sweep sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. And on the social media profile of one of the Stranger reporters in Seattle, Hannah Krieg, she posted, almost 300 Democratic mayors around the country have endorsed Kamala Harris. In Washington, the list includes the mayors of Issaquah, Kirkland, Redmond. And hasn't Redmond's mayor kind of been in some contentious spots based on the homeless housing situation going on in Redmond?
Yeah, no, she basically has defied her constituents. She's ambitious. She wants to move up in county government. She
maybe be a county executive down the line, right?
Or at least fill Claudia Balducci's place on the county council when Claudia runs for the top job.
So three East Side mayors, the mayor of Seattle, not surprising. The mayor of Shoreline, maybe a little bit surprising. The mayor of Spokane, not surprising. That's Lisa Brown, former state senator. And then the mayor of Tacoma. And the DemocraticMayors.org group that put out this list of all these mayors that have signed on to endorse Kamala Harris for president, somehow they managed to include former Seattle Mayor Jenny Durkin. So
you want that endorsement out there,
yeah,
do you?
Yeah, right? I don't know.
You sure you want that endorsement out there?
And then a left-leaning news political writer, the social media profile says bylines at the New York Times, Vulture, Time, and BuzzFeed. Louis Peitzman is the individual's name. Louis Peitzman posted, Kamala Harris would be our first Libra president in the astrology world.
A new coalition.
First Libra president since Jimmy Carter.
Well,
I don't know if that's an endorsement you want.
But they do live long.
That is true. Jimmy Carter and an extended life. God bless Jimmy Carter.
He hit the centennial mark.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Now, let's move to politics in the San Francisco area. The San Francisco Standard is kind of a news media watchdog of San Francisco politics. So if you want to call them conservative, if you want to call them right wing, I'll leave that up to everybody else. But they are trying to shine a light on the politics of San Francisco. So anyone who's raising questions about the politics of San Francisco, even if you're trying to be reasonable, you would probably be called conservative based on how wacky San Francisco's politics get, similar to Seattle's. The San Francisco Standard is reporting on social media that a $120 million program in San Francisco so far called the Dreamkeeper Initiative, which was designed to uplift black residents in San Francisco, is under scrutiny for mismanagement. And the San Francisco Standard story says San Francisco pledged $120 million to help black residents. The money's gone into some strange directions. The cut line to the story says public funds have been paid for black tie galas, a trip to Martha's Vineyard, and a bulk order of a department director's children's book. So in February 2021, San Francisco's mayor and a city supervisor, they came together to announce Dream Keeper Initiative, a landmark piece of legislation that promised to redirect $120 million in taxpayer money to address issues caused by systemic racism. But despite the many good deeds of the Dream Keeper Initiative, it's become a bookkeeper's nightmare. Many of Dream Keeper's community partners, nonprofits, businesses, individual grantees have been unable to build out capacity as planned, leaving millions unspent, while other groups have spent money in ways that have mystified and embarrassed city officials. It's unclear where millions of dollars have gone based on Dream Keeper's Initiative outdated budget dashboard. And London Mayor, Mayor London Breed recently intervened to order a freeze on funds for certain organizations that were seen as misusing city money.
I think it's because London Breed is a racist.
Maybe, yeah. I don't know.
She's a black woman.
Yeah. I mean, this is not unlike all kinds of COVID relief money that got doled out, and then just there was no accountability or no tracking of the money, and then the money gets spent inappropriately.
It's a grift, and if anyone complains, they're a racist. Yeah. Again, good for the mayor for freezing some of the money, but the whole agency looks like an excuse to rip off taxpayers. It is coming up on 8:30, the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Kellyanne Conway, who managed Donald Trump's first campaign for president, says there's stuff you need to know about Kamala that the media are not going to tell you. We'll let you know what that is. Plus, our conversation with Raul Garcia coming right up on The Commute with Carlson. We're back on the John Carlson Show. A reminder, today's word of the morning for our Take the Trip or Keep the Cash contest is bottle. That's bottle, B-O-T-T-L-E. Just text the word bottle to 206-421-5757. You're automatically entered into our contest for an end-of-the-week drawing for a trip for two to Napa, four nights in Napa. Lots of winery tours set up for you there. $750 spending cash. Plus, if you don't want the trip, if you don't want to take the trip, you can keep the cash. That's $3,000. That could come in handy. Again, the word is bottle. All right. Let us go to my friend, Dr. Raul Garcia. The first, I've got my sample ballot here. You know, I think of what I'm going to have to end up doing. It's just posting most of the recommendations. I've now made public my two endorsements, no surprises for any KVI listeners, of Dave Reichert for governor and the first endorsement I made, Raul Garcia for U.S. Senate. I was in Milwaukee for the National Convention, covering the National Convention last week when Raul Garcia was embarked on something I've never seen a candidate for office do. He walked. He walked over 120 miles to raise awareness, along with Ginny Burton, who I spoke to just moments ago, to the dangers of fentanyl and the need for mental health treatment and awareness as well. Raul Garcia, good morning. How are you, sir? Raul, do we have you? Let's try again.
Yes.
Now we hear you. I hear your car. How are you?
Thank you so much for having me. I'm doing really well, very empowered after this walk, which actually was 185 miles from Little Toppenish Hospital in the Yakima Nation to Seattle.
Oh, my goodness. 185 miles. In how many days?
Well, I took 10 days to do it. Three of those days were short walks. So six real solid over 20 mile days. One of the days, the day before we had to get to Issaquah, was 34 miles.
Oh, boy. Oh, so you walk a marathon and then, 12 more miles to go. How much weight did you lose?
Yeah.
That's what everyone wants to know.
You know what? This is the interesting thing. I came in at 201, left at 201. Of course, my team tells me, well, you build muscle. That's why you stayed at the same weight. But it was kind of a joke among all of us that I didn't lose a single pound in that walk. It wasn't easy, especially the first day on 109-degree weather. Plus the asphalt from Toppenish to Yakima. But I think that we sent a strong message, John, that we need to walk the walk. You know, politicians talk a lot, and we sit up there and say, well, at least we're doing something. Well, no, it's time to do something right. And we need to clean our streets from this fentanyl, which... there is no other option. It is killing our communities, and we're losing 300 people a day in our country. So it is time for the Senate to become a champion of this, and I'm going to work day and night for it to happen. And as I said in my speech on Sunday, whether you're a Democrat or a Republican or a Libertarian or an Independent, I'm going to go through a wall for you to represent Washington State. And I think that that's what we need, a U.S. Senator that actually represents Washington State.
If people want more information about your campaign, first of all, tell us where they go. And second, tell me the things you want people to do to help you.
Well, you could go to garcia4wa.com. Of course, everything in politics is money. And, you know, we can't send our message out without that. But also follow us on fentanylwalk.com. Look at what we did. And if you want to join this movement, which is bigger than us, and I got to tell you, John, the experience that I had during this walk with these great leaders beside me, Jenny Burton, that did 120 miles, Aaron Sachs, that did over 100 miles, my wife, that did over 50 miles, right there with me. For something that is a bigger than us. If you want to join that movement, please walk. Send us your video. Send us a message. Say, hey, I walked 5 miles today. We want to get to 1 million miles walked in Washington State for this cause. And now, after Jenny, of course, for mental health as well. It's funny how we are put in a position to realize the lack of resources that we have in this state, and it's time for change.
I think a lot of people are going to agree with you wholeheartedly. Now, what do you say to those who say, well, wait a minute, you know, why aren't you talking about the border? Why aren't you talking about the economy? Why aren't you talking about, you know, all the other, you know, federal issues that are dominating the headlines right now? Why the focus on fentanyl?
Well, fentanyl is the biggest killer that I've seen in 26 years and is the biggest killer in our country right now. More people are dying of fentanyl than anything else, and that is why it's number one in our platforms. And as your United States Senator, I've said that I will work day and night to bring the Americans Against Fentanyl Act, which will give felony charges to those that distribute this killer and open up our arms and hearts to the addiction world and said we're going to have involuntary mandatory rehab that is comprehensive so we could come back, you could come back to our communities. But of course that, you know, talking to Jenny along the way, this Americans Against Fentanyl Act will probably include how do we deal with drug addiction in our jails? And how do we restrict the border crossing of drugs into our country? Why don't we have discipline and leadership at our border as any sovereign nation should do to vet who comes in and out of their country? We are in the midst of losing that. So it may include that because, you know, in the U.S. Senate, you have great intentions for one thing and then the other side, the law is sausage. Well, we're going to make sure that this is good sausage when it comes out and is inclusive of all the problems that we have in our country. And of course, as your U.S. Senator, I'm going to go in there, and I have said I want to do an audit of our federal government, of all the overspending that we're doing, of all the printing of our money that shouldn't be happening, and actually fund effective programs. And whatever is ineffective goes back to the pocket of people, because When you have more money in the community being exchanged, we grow. As families, we grow as small businesses. And that's what we are all about, growth, and not this stagnant society that we are living in, where my children call me every month for help with gas because they can't really afford their life.
Well, you know, how many people have died of drug overdose in the last 4 years? More than 400,000. How many people died in the Second World War, which we fought in a little less than 4 years? About 400,000. In the last 4 years, we have lost as many Americans, as many American lives have been lost in the last 4 years to drugs, as we lost in the Second World War, the bloodiest war of the last century. That is just stunning.
It's stunning, John. And the truth of the matter is that fentanyl doesn't discriminate whether you're a Democrat or a Republican or whether you're rich or poor. You know, Laura Lynch that spoke at the park on Sunday, law daughter, she had a great family. She wasn't home. She lived a normal life, and she went upstairs, and her daughter was dead in her room. I mean, it's a horrible killer. We need to get rid of it in our streets, and we have a war against this killer in our streets, and we need to come together as Americans and beat this killer. And I think we can. With proper, fresh leadership, we could do this together.
Yeah. No, I think I think Raul Garcia, because of the astonishing tactic of walking across the state to get people's attention, it has actually caused a lot of people to avert their look. You know, they would have just looked beyond, and now they're saying, this guy did what? For what cause? And so I think you're going to get some traction here from this, Raul, and I want to thank you and tell you how much I admire you doing it. I ran statewide back in 2000, and I thought it was a big deal that I did it on a motorcycle. And here you are crossing the state by foot. It's so great hearing your voice. Thanks for joining us, Raul.
Well, it's about grit and dedication, John. You know, I came from little Cuba and managed to live the American dream, and I hope that I showed an example of what we can do. I hope we showed an example of what we could do, because I wasn't alone walking. There were people that walked a lot with us. So keep on walking, and let's walk this election in.
You got it. That's Raul Garcia, 185 miles in 10 days. Wow. It is 47 minutes after 8 o'clock. Coming up, what Kellyanne Conway had to say about Kamala Harris that you definitely don't want to miss. Right around the corner on The Commute with Carlson. Talk Radio 570 KVI, 8 minutes to 9 o'clock on the John Carlson program. Kellyanne Conway, the first woman to successfully manage a presidential race. She ran the Donald Trump campaign in 2016. Was asked about Kamala Harris's elevation as the next Democratic nominee replacing Joe Biden, who, again, this has never happened in American history, walked away from the nomination he had secured because the powers that be in the party were telling him that there was no way he could win. He was going to drag down the entire party. He eventually, reluctantly cried uncle, stepped out of the race, elevating Kamala. Here's what Kellyanne says you need to know about Kamala.
Kamala Harris led the chorus of liars every single day, pretending that Joe Biden is a trapeze artist or a triathlete behind the scenes. And then we all see what we know, what we see with our own two eyes. And that's just not true. Why did Kamala Harris or anybody else who's thinking of running for president or vice president, Sean, lack the courage, integrity, love of country to just say, listen, I love this man. I want him to step aside and spend the rest of his years. Let's hope there are 20, 30 more years, Joe Biden, in Delaware with his family. If you don't like the style of Kamala Harris, if cackling Kamala bothers you, if you see her with the word salads, if you don't like her style, wait till America learns her substance. This is somebody who ran for president in 2020. She had such a big rollout. She was 15% of the polls. She had huge endorsements, raised a ton of money, and fell out of that top tier fairly quickly because people got to know her and hear her. She didn't get a single delegate. She had disastrous staff turnover as vice president. I check it on the daily. Her public schedule, gentlemen, rarely has anything on it or one or two things on it.
Isn't that a surprise? I understand why Joe Biden doesn't have much on his schedule. But Kamala Harris? She's not 60 years old yet. And she hardly has any public appearances. Part of the reason for that is that when she's not tightly scripted, she can oftentimes sound foolish. Like she did with Lester Holt when he asked her the border czar why she hadn't been to the border.
Do you have any plans to visit the border?
I'm here in Guatemala today. At some point, we are going to the border. We've been to the border. This whole thing about the border, we've been to the border.
You haven't been to the border.
I haven't been to Europe. And I don't understand the point that you're making.
I think the point is that she hadn't been to the border, and she's the border czar. Everybody else seemed to have gotten that point. By the way, now it's come out that while she's been border czar, she's never had so much as a single conversation with the border chief. That would have helped if she wanted to know what's going on at the border. Let's talk again tomorrow.